My name is Eric Ahrens. I'm going to be chairing a session on in vivo imaging of stem cells. And I hope today we'll convince you that this is a worthwhile endeavor and that stem cell tracking is important for the basic science and also for regulatory purposes. And so we have some very excellent panelists today. We have, I'm going to give us a talk, Chris Conte is going to give a talk, Karen Abudi is going to give a talk. And you'll see some very different ways to approach the problem of imaging stem cells in their native environment, in vivo environment. So I'll start off the session. My name is Eric Ahrens. I just moved here. I'm in the Department of Radiology at UCSD. I'm based over at the Sanford Consortium, where we're building up a research program in stem cell molecular imaging. And we're putting in a multimodal imaging center there. I'm very excited to be here. I moved here from Pittsburgh. The weather's much nicer. And the environment is superb. So I'm going to tell you a few stories today about some of the work that I've been doing adapting MRI to visualize cells and molecules in the body. And pretty much that's what I've been working on for the last 20 years, in one form or another. And historically, MRI is thought of as a clinical tool for diagnosing lesions and it's a routine medical procedure. But what I'm intrigued by is the fact that you can use this to study basic biology. And so I've been adapting MRI to visualize cells and molecules in the body, and I'm going to be focusing on stem cells in the coming years, with the understanding that it's very important to understand how stem cells work in the native environment, where they migrate to, potentially the timing of the differentiation, identification of cellular niches that were unappreciated. So for scientific reasons, it's important to study the behavior of these cells. I also believe for regulatory reasons, regulatory bodies such as the FDA would like to know where cells go after you put them into the body. It's a basic question. And I think we'll be moving away from the notion of having magic cells and more towards developing a fundamental understanding, scientific understanding of how they behave. Related to this is cellular immunology in vivo. And so I'm also very interested in tracking cells in the body, white blood cells, and understanding diseases and basic immunology. So much like you use flow cytometry and confocal microscopy and optical techniques for looking at the behavior of cells and their phenotype, we'd like to do the similar sort of analyses in vivo. And I'm trying to adapt MRI to do that. And a related problem is more clinically oriented is inflammation diagnostic. So we'd like to be able to develop ways to visualize inflammation in the body in a way that's unambiguous and also to quantify the severity of inflammation. And this will help develop therapeutics, but also has great diagnostic value. And when doing this, we have an eye on using biologically safe reagents. So when you do this endeavor, MRI intrinsically can't visualize cells using intrinsic contrast. So you have to label the cells with something. And that something needs to be safe to those cells. And one of the beautiful things about MRI is that if you can get it to work in a mouse, you have a possibility to get it to work in a human. And so we're trying to leverage that power of MRI. So we always have our eye on clinical translation. And that's actually a pretty severe filter. There's lots of ways to do preclinical MRI with cells, but actually very few of those are translatable. And so our approach is actually to go from molecule to man, develop molecules, and then take that all the way to the clinic. And the early uses of these would be surrogate biomarkers to accelerate clinical trials, such as stem cell therapies. So I'm going to go through a technology I've been developing over the years I call in vivo cytometry. You're visualizing cells in vivo, and you're also counting how many are present. So it's sort of analogous to flow cytometry, except you're not studying cells in culture, you're studying cells in the body. You have cells of interest. They could be any types of cells, autologous, allogenic cells, or engineered cell line. We've been developing these things called perfluorocarbon emulsions. Perfluorocarbon molecules, I'll show you a picture of one, has been studied in biomedicine for many decades in the context of artificial blood substitutes. Dwayne Roth's name was mentioned. Alliance Pharmaceuticals is the prime example of research endeavors in that area. And we've been, engineered these emulsions to readily enter cells in a culture, so you just add it as another factor into your tissue culture. It goes inside of the cell, labeling the cell. The cell does not break down the emulsion. There's no enzymes or low pH does not break it down. It labels the cell. You can measure how much is taken up by the cell. And over time, there's no evidence for exocytosis of these reagents. So it's, as long as the cell remains viable, the agent labels the cell. And then you inject the cells into a patient. You take a proton scan, which is the conventional anatomy that you're accustomed to with MRI. And then you tune your spectrometer or your MRI machine to image fluorine-19, which is an alternate nucleus, very similar geomagnetic ratio, very close to it. And you acquire both of these images in the same scanning session. The fluorine-19 gives you an image of the labeled cells with no background, essentially no background fluorine in the body that you can detect. So you have hotspot imaging, the anatomy from the proton, you overlay the two, and you get the labeled cells, the anatomical context. Furthermore, you can analyze the data, integrating up regions of interest. You can actually count how many cells are in particular hotspots. Another powerful way to use this technology is preclinically, where you just put the labeled cells into an experimental model and then you necropsy panels of tissues and you just run a conventional high-resolution fluorine-19 NMR, and you generate these histograms. You have the tissue panel on the x-axis, the cell number on the y-axis. So this is a way to rapidly assay the cell biodistribution in a model. And this is, of course, I think, important for stem cell therapies. You put cells in, you want to know where they go. You think you put them into the brain or into the kidney, but in fact, they're probably going somewhere else in large numbers, and you want to be able to identify those and quantify it. Now, this is a busy picture of many molecules that have been used, perfluorocarbon molecules have been used for MRI over the years. Now, an important consideration is the number of chemically equivalent fluorine atoms. So we like this molecule, perfluoro-15 crown 5 ether. These linear perfluoropolyethers are also very nice. You can put bright fluorescent dyes on the end groups and enabling a dual mode agent. And so, for example, you put NIR dyes on there so you can do both in vivo fluorescence imaging and in vivo MRI. This is a labeled cell. This is a dendritic cell. These little droplets here are the perfluorocarbon emulsion droplets. Large numbers are inside of the cell. This is an example of the readouts you can get for this type of technology. You can look at the transplant site. If you're injecting the cells, you want to know where they go. If you got hit the right spot, here's a proton image, here's the fluorine image, rendered in pseudocolor, fuzzy blob. You overlay the two, you get the labeled cells, the anatomical context. You can look at cell migration, inject the dendritic cells in a foot pad, they migrate up to the popliteal lymph node of the knee. You can monitor this in real time. You can also look at the biodistribution with no a priori knowledge about where the cells go. You can inject the cells and then see where the hot spots reside. And this is done without pre-scans, and the signal you get out from the fluorine is independent of the background tissue it resides in. Now, we've done a variety of different preclinical studies with this, for example, looking at T cells. This is an example of T cell trafficking in an NOD mouse, where we purify T cells that have a T cell receptor that's specific for an antigen found in the pancreas. We label them for fluorocarbon, we inject them intravenously, and then they tend to home and accumulate at their site, the pancreas, and you get a hot spot here, and then you can integrate up that signal, and you're going to calculate or measure the apparent number of cells in pancreas, and this is different animal number, and you get about 2 or 3% of the cells you inject actually home there. And so this is an in vivo measurement of the number of cells homing. So this is an example of in vivo cytometry. And this is another example in a colorectal cancer model, IBD model, where the model is this MUC1 IL-10 crossed animal, MUC1 transgenic model was created by Olivera Finn in University of Pittsburgh. It has a humanized aberrant MUC1 transmembrane protein. And then we cross it with an IL-10 knockout animal. And this mouse gets IBD and CRC symptoms. And you put T cells in that recognize the aberrant form of the MUC1, and you can look at the biodistribution of this expression. And you can sure enough, you see lots of them in the colon, not unexpected. But unexpectedly, we have this niche over here that we identified in the pancreas. And often, patients who are being treated for IBD have symptoms of pancreatitis. And this might be a molecular explanation for this. And pancreatitis might be extra-intestinal manifestation of IBD. And so you can make these sort of discoveries using this sort of technology. Now, this was acquired just using NMR very rapidly. T cells in the pancreas on the y-axis, this is a log plot, high dynamic range of sensitivity, about 1,000 cells per sample. Now, this also works for stem cells. This is an example of the Regeneron cell line injected into a rat stroke model. And this is the stroked region identified in the proton image. And you can see the hot spots of cells. They hit the right spot, and then you can monitor those cells days and weeks later. Now, as I mentioned, we have an eye on clinical translation, and we've been very aggressive in this area. And so I talked to the FDA about this technology around 2006. I gave an academic seminar, and they made a very interesting suggestion, very innovative suggestion, is that we We consider this agent as a excipient to the therapy. The therapy is the cells, like a stem cell or a dendritic cell, and you're adding essentially a de minimis amount of material to the body. So why not just treat it like a excipient? And so they said, why not open a drug master file for an imaging agent? So I think it's the first time that's ever been tried. And so traditionally, a drug master file is used for like bulking agents or colorization agents. It makes those are the things that make your pill look green or look blue. But now we've used this mechanism, regulatory mechanism, for an imaging agent. The amount of material you're actually putting in the body is very small. It's micrograms. In fact, someone calculated that you ingest more fluorine in a day by drinking a day's worth of fluorinated drinking water compared to what you would get in a scan like this. So it's a small amount. The nice thing about this is that the investigator holds the IND, and then they cross-reference the drug master file. And the FDA has all this information, the drug master file, about the manufacturing, the acute tox, genotox, cell tox, and a variety of cell types. And the first IND that we've opened is the University of Pittsburgh Cancer Institute Phase 1-2 clinical trial, treat colorectal cancer of autologous DC vaccines, comparing different routes of administration, and it's NCI funded. And we started recruiting patients this year, and it's working really well. This is basically clinical DC-based therapies. I won't go through this in detail. We take monocytes from the patients. It's an autologous therapy. We soak them in a cocktail of cytokines to make immature DCs. And at day 5, we add activation factors and do antigen loading, where we also add the PFC for cell tracking. So we can do many things simultaneously, including label the cells. At day 7, we have mature DCs labeled. We inject them in the patient. And then we've done very extensive in vitro assays to make sure that labeling doesn't affect the phenotype and function of the cells. And I won't go through all this, but we look at things like the viability, the maturation markers, the cytokine secretion. We've done mixed lymphocyte reactions, chemokine receptor expression, transwell migration assays, also antigen processing, antigen presentation. In all cases, labeled versus unlabeled, and there's no appreciable changes. So these look very safe, these types of reagents. This is some of the first clinical data that we got this year. We adapted a Siemens 3T system, which is a commonplace in large hospitals, with a $5,000 hardware modification, fluorine 19 proton coil. And this is one of the first spectra that we acquired, fluorine 19 spectra. This is the DCs in the patient. These were injected intradermally in our initial experiments. The TFA is a fluorine reference that's chemically shifted, and that's contained in this little capillary area in the center of the coil. So it's a fixed reference, and we can do quantification. So the area of this peak represents the number of cells that are present. We know how much fluorine is present per cell because we measure it directly as part of the release criteria. And then we can do imaging. And so this is an early image that we acquired. The cells were injected here. This is the hot spot. And then we can watch them over days as they migrate away. And the beauty of this is acquired in about 30 seconds. This is acquired in about 9.5 minutes. So the imaging times are very reasonable clinically. And we're really excited about this data, although I'm sure you've seen a better looking MRI image. This is the first, some of the first data using this technology in man. So now, that trial's continuing, and we're going to do some other trials with different people. But there's some avenues that I'm going to explore here in the future in my new job here. We're going to look at tumor oxygenation. So perfluorocarbons, as I mentioned, have been used for artificial blood substitutes. They dissolve oxygen readily. And when that happens, it speeds up the so-called T1 relaxation rate of the fluorine 19. So that's the time it takes for the nuclei to polarize along the magnetic field direction. So it's linearly proportional to the amount of oxygen dissolved in the perfluorocarbon. And you actually use that as an intracellular oxygen sensor. So you can look at cell metabolism in situ. And so we've been exploring this property in tumors initially. This is a solid tumor in a rat brain, a 9L glioma tumor. And we can actually measure the intracellular PO2 in absolute terms of millimeters of mercury. This is a normal tumor, untreated, slowly gets hypoxic. And then if you do a single dose of BCNU, you see a rapid increase in PO2. And this is a very striking effect. So it's like real-time drug delivery. You can monitor it via the cell metabolism. So long before you'll see shrinkage in MRI of the tumor, you can actually see changes in the metabolism of the cell. And we've also explored this in the context of different types of therapy. This is an example of immunotherapy where we're putting in cytotoxic T cells, CD8 positive T cells, to treat a glioma, CNS glioma. and the cells are injected IV. Very few get into the brain, actually, but it's enough. You can actually see a little blip in the intracellular PO2. And so we think this is a very exciting result. In fact, only about 10,000 cells make it into the CNS, but yet you can see the cytotoxic effect via its change in the metabolism of the cancer cells. Another area that we're looking at is to expand the in vivo cytometry, much like you do flow cytometry. You have different colors like PE and FITC and so forth for different markers. We like to label the cells in different colors. And the way you do that with MRI, you use different perfluorocarbons with different chemical shifts. Then you can make spectrally resolved images and color code them. So this is two different molecules, and they have different chemical shift. Here's the labeled cells. Here's our TFA reference. And then if you do image, you can color code them. You can easily make images of them separately using MRI. Now, I'm going to quickly touch on another way that we've been doing imaging using perfluorocarbons that are formulated for direct intravenous injection. And then these are taken up by monocytes and macrophages in the body, thereby labeling the cells. They participate in inflammatory events and result in accumulation of fluorine at the inflammatory hotspot. And then you can detect that using fluorine 19. You can also detect it using NMR, before. Here's a nice example coming from Chen Ho's lab at Carnegie Mellon. Organ transplant rejection. Heart lung from one strain of rat is transplanted to a different strain of rat such that it undergoes rejection. And then what happens is you then do a single IV injection of the perfluorocarbon and you get a inflammatory hotspots are then clearly visible around the perimeter of the transplanted heart. So this is a cardiac-gated imaging of a transplanted heart that's grafted into the abdomen. And this is the exact pattern of the macrophage burden on these the hearts. And we've shown that the fluorine 19 signal is linear proportional to the macrophage burden using PCR analysis. This is another example I really like. It's an IBD, which is hard to diagnose. It's a patchy disease, and if you look at a conventional MRI, you can maybe see a little thickening of the colon wall, but it's ambiguous. It takes a lot of human interpretation of the image to identify the condition, but with fluorine 19 imaging, you can actually see very nicely a ring of fire around the colon, and that's indicating the severity of the inflammation. You can integrate up the heat and, for example, measure the effect of therapeutics, and this is a 3D image of a live mouse that acquired at 8 minutes, ascending, descending colon. You can see the effects of the inflammation very clearly. And then you could use putative therapeutics. You can integrate up the signal, count, basically counting how many fluorine atoms proportional to macrophage burden, and test therapeutics. In this case, we looked at dexamethasone and cyclosporin A. We can look at the effects, the ascending and descending colon. Now, we also bring this into larger animals. This is a porcine model of a myocardial infarct. And we give the pig a heart attack, a 30-minute occlusion of the circumflex artery. We then inject a bolus of the perfluorocarbon. We image in a clinical scanner. You see some hot spots, and this is what it looks like, imaged at high resolution. And then we're using this to direct the biological therapeutics. So if you have stem cells, you want to know where to inject them in the heart. We believe that inflammation is a great visual cue of where to inject. So you have a nice detailed map of the most recent inflammation from the recent heart attack. You can then inject at the boundary, for example, and that's where you get the most bang for the buck by injecting your cells. So we've been using that information that I showed you, 3D information, into a magnetic cath suite shown here, and we register the MRI data set to the catheter suite, and then we can then inject the, this is the lesion here, this beige is the segmentation of the left ventricle, this is the lesion. These are injection sites where we inject a mock test article. So we think that this inflammation imaging will be helpful for directing the delivery of stem cells and other biologics. Now, I'm about out of time, but I'd like to say one other area I'm working on is MRI reporters using genes. And this is a probeless approach. We're not using a substrate or a nanoparticle to enhance the sensitivity. We're just using a DNA sequence. And the way we do this is using engineered ferritins. And so we've been developing ferritins over the years that show more efficacious iron loading and paramagnetism compared to wild-type ferritins. And then you express those in cells, and then you can get endogenous contrast, enhanced contrast. So for example, if you take a viral vector with the reporter, you inject the subventricular zone here. And then over time, then you can see the rostral migratory stream with a neuroblast. And so we think this is a really neat area where you don't need now to deliver any nanoparticles or small molecules to enable the the visualization, you just need to put a gene in, and this enables long-term cell tracking where the, you're not limited by dilution of the probe. So thank you very much.